Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here on the DeFalco Files with the owner and creator of the Future Stars of Wrestling here in Las Vegas, Joe DeFalco. And Joe, we got some stuff to talk about. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the not so fun part of pro wrestling, and that is dealing with the city of Las Vegas for the first time in pretty much your whole existence.
Well, it's Clark County, but it's, and we have dealt with them and we've never had issues with them. They came in during a New Year's thing and was like, hey, making sure you're not selling liquor. Everything's all good. Somebody we knew was renting the arena for something and was trying to get like a liquor permit for the day and things like that and wasn't able to. So they came in and they were making sure we were doing the right thing because we were told, hey, we need a special permit for something. And they were like, oh yeah, we're all good. And now it's like, again, there's another issue. And it's like, you know, just dealing with it. And it's like, you're getting three different answers from three different sets of people. Because I guess there's a new thing called the sports and special events. And it's like, we're neither a sport nor a special event, but somehow we're lumped in with that. And, you know, talk to some really nice people and, you know, trying to expedite things, you know. So Saturday we have a, our student showcase, which we call Future Shock. And, you know, that features a lot of the younger talent to give them opportunities. And it's a show that's basically all family and friends. And if some of our, you know, regulars want to come by, they can. So, you know, we're set. We have the women's thing on Sunday. We're kind of adjusting how that's going to be. But, you know, we're just trying to deal with this. It's like, you know, stuff hanging above your head. It's like you're trying to, you know, follow all the rules and things like that. And again, I'm not one to shy away from, you know, telling people what's going on. You know, it's extremely frustrating. You get an email one week, you get a visit the next week, and then it's like, oh, well, you know, you had Metro and licensing there. So I don't get what the issue is. They have no issues. They sent me the paperwork, said we were good. Now, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, well, I'm not sure. And it's like, ugh. You know, we got a lot of things happening.
Yeah, it's crazy to think, you know, what is behind this? Are others dealing with it? You know, that's another good question, because I'm sure if, you know, they're hounding you, eventually they're going to be coming after everyone who's running shows.
Well, you would think so, since it seems like Eventbrite is their go-to on, you know, finding what's going on in town. Yeah. And I guess fortunately for the other companies, especially the ones that don't have any licensing whatsoever, don't have a business license, have a musician's license, blah, blah, blah. But if they go do it at a bar that is properly zoned, I'm not too sure they're going to, you know, contact them. They may, because from what I understand, you know, the county is doing a lot of cracking down. So if the county's cracking down, I know the one issue they had was on the Eventbrite that Jennifer Show needed to say Future Stars of Wrestling presents, because we're the ones who are the holder of the licenses. Like, they're big now on the having a professional promoter's license to do things, which, you know, that's $200 a year. And if there's four of these companies in town that are running that don't have them, you know, other than Ricky and Big Valley, I don't know who, if anybody else has them, you know, to be honest with you. So it's like, well, if they see this company is promoting an event in Vegas, they're going to go now search to see if they have a business license, because, you know, the admissions license costs, whatever, $100 a year. The other one's $200 a year. I have to have one with the state of Nevada business license, and that's about $400 or $500 a year. So, you know, it actually costs money to operate. You know, everybody who's trying to slide by, you know, eventually you're going to get caught. We're caught, and we have all the licenses that we're supposed to have, and they're questioning things. So, right. You know, time's coming for everybody, I guess, which for me, great, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, obviously, we haven't talked since the show at the Silverton, Luck of the Draw, in which we saw G Sharp defend his title. Overall thoughts of how that night went?
Tremendous. It was a fantastic night. Then, you know, we got the numbers, and again, another big walk up. You know, our check from the Silverton is, you know, we were consistent. What we saw with the anniversary show, we thought we did very well. And then usually the lull, which is survival of the fittest. And the numbers were pretty much identical, which was awesome.
Yeah.
And then we take the numbers here, and all of a sudden, those numbers are about $3,000 more than the anniversary show in survival of the fittest. And as you saw, packed house, you know, we probably had close to 700 people there, you know. The profit margin ended up being better than expected, because initially, you know, the cost for crosses was costly, you know. But right. Kevin, obviously, you know, his appearance really generated some big business for us.
Right.
And, you know, we talked at one point, there was some concern about who was going to be in the main event. Everybody's here to see Cross. Are they going to leave? I know Hammerstone was like, hey, what do you think? And I hit it up with Sharp, and Sharp's like, hey, you know what? I'm the champ, and I want to go on last. You know, it's my job to do my job as the champion.
Right.
And I'll tell you what, those guys had one of the best matches I've seen in FSW this year. You know, we've had some great matches, but that match was fantastic. So I'm glad we ended the night on that, because I also had the idea of figuring out a way to have, you know, which I was shocked, because it was having Kevin come out at the end with Hammerstone, because we figured, you know, who wants to talk more than Kevin? The answer would be nobody. And it turned out that Kevin was the one who didn't talk, as they brought Chris Bay out. So it was Chris and G Sharp ended the night. So it was, I would think it was a very, very big night for Sharp.
Right. Yeah, very big night.
That one picture is fantastic of the four, of the three greatest champions in FSW history and the current one.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when you talk about hard hitting, Hammerstone said that Greg, you know, he really showed that he could hang, because there was no give in what those two were dishing out to each other. It was
That was the one match I was sitting pretty well, standing by where all the merch tables were, watching, and it was like, oh, this match is killing it, you know. Yeah. And you know, things started off with the Rumble, and we had so many people, we kind of adjusted that. And I really liked that 45-second entrance, because, you know, the first 10 or 15 seconds, the guys, you know, whoever's coming in is coming in. And then when you get that lull, because a lot of times there's 10, 11, there's not a lot of eliminations, waiting that minute, that extra 15 seconds by making it only 45 seconds, it's action-packed, and now you're gearing up for the last 15 seconds or 10 seconds for the next participant. So the match, surprisingly to me, still lasted till 6 o'clock. So it was, you know, we started a little later because of the things we did, But that match still was over 50 minutes long, which we didn't really shave that much time off the entire match. But it seemed to flow so much quicker just because the shorter, you know, time in between the wrestlers, you know, entering the Rumble. And the last part of that Rumble, I can't think of a better one because there was so much great talent in there and so many big things happening. And from the moment where Bodie started at one to where it looked like Luke Curtis was going to throw him out, and then Luke got thrown out by Bodie, and I'm not sure what the reasoning was. Was it the love for Bodie or the hatred for Luke Curtis? But the crowd erupted when Bodie tossed Luke, and then they were livid when Duke ended up taking out Bodie. And, you know, one thing I noticed was when they introduced Hammerstone, it was like he got a solid reaction. You know, I thought it would be a bigger reaction, to be honest with you.
Right.
But then when he took out Duke as the final participant to win the match, once again, the crowd, that was the loudest they were. Was at that moment was when Hammerstone won, like they were so excited for that. And I was like, wow, you know, the fans from, and that's the one thing. And that's why you always try to get those early matches, try to get a good hot start, man. The crowd was hot all night long.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Another match that, again, you saw a lot of hard hitting was Maserati and Brittany Brooks. You know, Maz, you got to give her all the credit, man. She, you know, little banged up. You could kind of see, you know, she wasn't 100% going in. And boy, you know, there was some shot she took that was just like, man.
Yeah, you know. I saw a decent amount of that match. Didn't see everything in it, but I did see certain parts where at one point it looked like Maserati was going to win and the crowd was firmly behind her, which is kind of funny because if you go back about a year and a half and it was Maz versus Brittany Brooks, it was the total opposite where everybody was kind of behind Brittany.
Yeah.
So, you know, Maz is beloved here in Vegas, and, you know, they were with her the entire match. And again, you know, I thought it was perfect to put them as the semi-main to break up the cross thing, because that was another pitch. Like, hey, what do you think, you know, double main event? I'm like, nah, I think we're good. Instead of having the two men's singles matches back to back, it could take away, you know. And it was like putting Maz and Brittany in that position, and Brittany's firmly, you know, solidified herself. And and then we had the two tag matches, and man, was the crowd behind the mariachis or what? It was like unbelievable once again. And you know, maybe the biggest shocker is the Suavecitos are now the FSW tag team champions.
Did you have to look at your sheet two or three times to make sure that you're the one who booked that? Just wait,
I'll tell you, the biggest shock was when one of the mariachis crashed and burned on their move on the outside. Yep. That, you know, instead of you fucked up chance, the crowd got behind them to do it again.
Yeah.
And when they did it again and hit the move, man, That was a pop of the night right there too.
Yeah, it's interesting what came out of that match, you know, the Suavecitos, you can't deny the fact that that growth over a 4, 5, 6 year period, man.
They're definitely a true tag team now. And that was always the fight. It was like, man, you guys got it. The crowds, not that they like them, but they get behind them where they don't like them. But, you know, they're solid heels, I guess you could say, to where their characters are over and things like that. And I just thought they weren't, and you know, they disagreed until they realized when they went out of town that I was correct, and they worked on that, and now they are a unit. You know, when you see certain teams, you know, you see Class in Reno, you see the Mariachis, you see the Unguided, you saw what Royce and Jarrell became. You saw Makeshift Chemistry got that pretty quickly. Sky High, their brothers. You know, the tag teams that last, you know, the ones who are putting in the work and working together. There's a lot of teams that got put together that wasn't their ultimate goal. They might have been pretty good, but they never got to that next level because they really wanted to be single stars. And it's like, you know what? Maybe you're not good enough to be a single star, but you could have been good enough to be tag team stars. And you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, some people's ego doesn't put them in that position to where they want to excel. It's kind of like when you have that referee who's a student who's trying to be a wrestler, that he really doesn't take it seriously enough. And that's why you see now when we had Austin before, and you had Justin Borden, and you have Rick Knox, who's an AEW guy now, who was with us, who was an indie guy forever. And then you see Romo, who's in TNA, and you see Ref Cody, and you see Amber, the cream rises to the top because that's their goal, to be the best referee they can. The students are looking to be the best wrestlers they can, and they're using that as a stepping stone. And yeah, you know, they'll put in the work to be decent enough, but they'll never be elite. And you know, it's hard to get people to be elite because most people who go to wrestling school to train don't say, "Hey, man, I want to be the next fucking, you know, what's his face, Robinson, you know, or fucking, you know,
Charles Robinson or Earl Hebner or
nobody's dream is to be, you know, the guy who screwed over Bret Hart at the Survivor Series, you know. Oh man, I want to be that guy. No, you want to be the fucking guy in the main event. So, you know, and sometimes they end up reverting back later down the line because they realize, hey, you know what? Maybe the same for me. And maybe I'm not going to be an elite wrestler, but I think I could be an elite referee. Right. So, you know, and with the Suavecitos, those guys, you know, they put in the work. You got to give them credit, you know.
Yeah.
I know, and again, I don't want to say the dumb people, but, you know, people who think they know me, "Oh, I'll never put the belts on the Suavecitos." I don't let my personal issues with people affect business if they do good business. Now, obviously, if the personal stuff rolls over into the business, then that's why things are the way they are. That there's reasons why you don't see people working for us anymore. Because, you know, it goes both ways. You know, you need to do what I need you to do. And obviously, the Suavecitos were willing to do that. We have to have a conversation. We had a conversation. Everything was good. You know, despite maybe not getting along great and not being best friends, because they're not my best friends. We don't hang out. But they did what needed to be done. And them not being around really had nothing to do with other than they were really busy. You know, they've been around for the last year and a half, maybe. But the thing was, those guys were so busy, it was hard to get them in situations. So it's like, you know, there's plenty of others that you may not have seen. And it's like, oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. You know, everybody wants to read into everything, and nobody knows unless you ask me, because if you ask me, I'll fucking tell you.
Yeah, of course. And finally, one last question. Danny Limelight, I don't know, seem to be really upset that FSW allowed Chris Bay to restart that match.
Well, he had the authority to it. And guess who gave him the authority? Me. And Danny Limelight talked a big game and tried to get out of it. And, you know, I let Chris handle it.
Yeah. And unfortunately for Danny, did not turn out his way.
Well, most people didn't think it was going to turn out that way. But Danny was trying to pull the wool over everybody's eyes and, you know, get that payday and then walk out and not take the beating. So, you know, so all the fans got what they wanted to see.
All right. Well, speaking of getting what you want to see, the Future Shock, which is the showcase of the younger talent, will be on Saturday, December 6th at 5 p.m. And it got some decent matchups going. Jaden Cole and Colin Muldoon. Is this the first time that they're going one-on-one?
Yes, it is. You know, Colin Muldoon, you know, he's in delusional land and, you know, calls himself the rookie of the year, the undefeated. And it's like, dude, you know, but again, I'll give him credit. He was the one who stepped up to Graves in the Rumble. It didn't work out well, but not many other people would have stood up to Graves like that.
Yeah. Pretty impressive.
You know, some people call it cocky, arrogant, and, you know, he calls it confidence. You know, I call it delusion. So now we're gonna see. You know, a lot of people, there's a lot of that, those younger guys there that if you look at our younger students, that, you know, it's all fun and games and everybody's friends until situations happen and you don't get it and that person gets it. And it's like, I've been doing this longer than him. Why is the spotlight Jaden Cole seemingly getting the spotlight stuff? You know what I mean? Right. Why is he getting the match with G-Sharp? Which right. Colin Muldoon did. But, you know, and Jaden Cole got the opportunity to wrestle for the FSW Heavyweight Championship in like his third match or his second match.
Right.
But that's what happens when a guy like G-Sharp, who helps train the students, see something in somebody and they're training, working his ass off to make himself better. Instead of talking about how great he is, Jaden Cole, like I said, I didn't even know he was ready until I saw him at the Gabe seminar. He stuck up, you know, he's the one who stepped up and said, hey, I'm going to pay my money. I want to get a match in front of Gabe Sapolsky. And none of us at that time thought he was ready. It wasn't even a discussion. Like I said, none of the trainers were like, oh, my God, you got to check out Jaden Cole. So that was one of the rare occasions where I ended up booking a guy on Future Shock before a Cody or a Remy or a Kenny or a Bay said, hey, you need to. None of those guys were like, hey, this guy, you got to get on that next show. But he had one match and he proved that it was like, oh, shit, this guy's deserving. And that's where we are with him.
Yeah. So, you know, you got some of the younger guys here. Oh, come on. There we go.
It's a rematch from the pre-show.
What was that?
It's a rematch from the pre-show.
Yeah. Young Money and Golden Showers. I mean, you got guys here who are really stepping up, man. It's pretty good to see. Especially with, you know, how diverse, it's not like everyone is 6 months in. There's a diverse lineage of time here between all four of them in terms of being at different places. So it's great to see them, you know, get the pre-match opportunity and now get a little rematch here.
Yeah, you know, Jeffrey Excellence was a guy that was always helpful. You know, he was pretty good, solid, you know, trained by Luster over from the Reno Scum in Reno and came to FSW. And, you know, he was always there. I always try to reach out and get a spot for him because he was that helpful guy. But then he decided to go to Japan and work under Taka Michinoku and came back a totally different wrestler. Like now he was dedicated. He got himself in fantastic shape. His work, he's engaging. We've used him on color commentary. He's fun. He's a good dude. And he is elevated that team. You know, Trademark, he's one of our younger guys, and you know, he's solid, but Jeffrey Excellence is the reason that Trademark got a match on the pre-show.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm not going to say otherwise, because that is the truth. There would have not been a spot for him. We had too many people in the Rumble. And if Excellence and I wasn't putting together a tag match, he would have not been on the show. So he gets to be on one of our biggest shows.
Yeah.
Because of his alliance. And again, the team works together, and Adrian Rain's kind of like the third guy in it. But Adrian Rain does his own thing in most cases. You know, we had one show where one of them couldn't make it, so Adrian Rain stepped in and did the tag. And, you know, he's aligned with them, I guess we could say.
So, and then, Joe, hold on now. As a faction, would that make them reigning golden showers?
I guess it could be if you want to pitch that to them. But Adrian Rain will be on Future Shock also. And he's wrestling Davion.
Yeah, which should be a good match.
But that's another solid match with, guys from the upper echelon of the students who put in their time, gotten good opportunities. And those are two solid matches right there. And then, you know, we got the main event that happened, making his wrestling debut. Beans, it's a long time coming. Tag teaming with Sky High, who have really been all about themselves of late, and now they got something going on. And you know, you want to talk about stepping up with the Jester replacing the mastermind and absorbing his knowledge and his brain matter. The Asylum have kind of taken it to a new level. They're kind of like the reigning faction of Future Shock.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, definitely. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, Beans get in there and have an opportunity, especially to tag with Sky High. That's a great opportunity for him. And the other match we got is Sanders versus C4.
Yeah, it's funny because, C4 and Khan and they ended up Sanders and Khan jumped C4, who had issues with Oliver Kanaday, who we not even seen. And it seemed like those guys have formed an alliance. And I'm 100% being truthful when I say Oliver Kanaday's MIA. So I know Khan Osborne, and, you know, right now they're talking about being the necessary evil of Future Shock. So we're going to see C4 and Sanders, but he's going to have to watch out because Khan Osborne will be in the corner. But more importantly is, like, I haven't seen Oliver in training. I haven't seen Oliver. He hit me up about a booking in California about 3 weeks ago. And it was like, but he didn't show up to Luck of the Draw. He didn't show up to help set up the ring. Didn't say anything. So you hit me up about a booking the week before somewhere that they ended up covering. And you were going to drive 6 hours by yourself for basically gas money for an opportunity. And you didn't even come to your own hometown show. Because initially there was a spot for him in the Rumble.
Yeah.
But I already knew in my mind that he wasn't going to be there.
Yeah.
Which cost Sanders, because that was going to be the last team. I was going to put them together since they were going to be together. I was going to put Sanders and Oliver as two participants.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if there's going to be beef, but, you know, Sanders didn't get to be at luck of the draw in the Rumble because of that.
Yeah.
And I ain't fucking joking. I'm telling you how it is.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Showing the importance of communication and showing up and, you know.
Yeah. You know, I get you got to work, but man.
Yeah. All right. Then the next day, Sunday, December 7th at 5 p.m., the Winter Wonderland, the FSWW show. You know, like it's going to be interesting to see some of these matches, what you have announced so far. Simone versus Fallon Gray.
Who now will be training full-time at FSW, as Fallon Gray has now become a Las Vegas native.
Good. Good.
And, she just moved here this week, so talked with her the other day, you know, set the rates, and yep, she should be starting on Monday.
Excellent. That is wonderful to hear. And then Zamaya against Remy. Boy, it's going to be a lot of hard hitting right there. I don't know if Remy wants that match, man.
Well, you know, I'm sure Zamaya's okay with it.
Yeah.
You know, they've had their issues from what had happened in the past with Moz and, yep, and Koa and them all getting involved with the matches that were going on. And, you know, Remy's intergender partner is Moz.
Yep.
So Zamaya's intergender partner's Koa. I could see, since we are doing the tournament and the first round of the tag title tournament will start on Sunday with the AEW's Layla Gray and Luke Curtis. And they're taking on Taylor York and Jacob East. And Jacob East is somebody I'm pretty impressed with.
Yeah. Yeah, Jacob East is pretty damn solid. And that should be a pretty good match, too. You know, Taylor York getting better just constantly. She's come a long way over the last few years. And now,
yeah, for sure. She doesn't have a ton of time in, but from the first day she stepped into the FSW to ring to where she is now, it's probably been about a year and a half. And, you know, huge improvements there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and again, you know, you got Brittany Brooks will be on the show.
Yeah, we just announced she's going to be defending against Jocelyn Navarro. So that should be a big-time battle.
Yeah, and this is the first time Jocelyn Navarro has been back in a while.
Yeah. She's going to be here. Maya World, another top women's wrestler from Texas.
Yep.
She's worked a lot of the big promotions there, Reality Wrestling, to just name a few. New Texas Wrestling Cartel, you know, some of the good companies. She's going to be on the card. SOS returns.
Very impressive, too.
You know, it's possible that we may have a second tournament match, but we ended up, someone wasn't able to make it, so we're trying to, you know, scramble to finalize the card. Just before we got on, we filled the spot. Jin Savani is going to be returning. So, you know, it's possible that she's going to wrestle Maya World, but it depends on if we're doing the intergender match. So,
yeah. Yeah. It looks like it's going to be a solid, fun show. And again, that takes place on the 7th of December at 5 p.m. And of course,
it's a Title Match Network exclusive.
Yep. I was just going to say, you can watch it on Title Match if you're not in the area or if you can't get down to FSW. And then of course, Season's Beatings, Saturday, December 20th at 7 p.m. Season's Beatings, Toy Drive is something that has been a tradition now.
That we're talking about doing some stuff, talking with MK, normally the Grinch. you know, we may go all out this year. We're trying to see if we can make it work to where admission will be free if you bring toys. So we just got to figure that out. So we have a little bit of time. You know, once we get past Saturday and Sunday, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Let's hang out on pause. I got to take this call. Very important.
All right. Go take the call, Joe.
Hey, what's up, Kyle?
All right. So that's what's going on with Joe right now. Doing business as always. When you look at Future Shock, this is something that is very important in terms of the support that the fans have shown in terms of it should be fun in terms of the support that fans have shown with coming out. And a lot of the people who go to Future Shock are first time wrestling viewers or maybe first time live wrestling viewers, you know, getting to see some friends actually wrestle, which is a huge opportunity to make new fans and also see some of the regular fans come out. So it's big for these guys. And very important to get out and support them. All right.
All right. That was a very important call. It was about a venue that we are talking with on the Strip that we're looking to do possibly New Year's resolution at, which would be in January. We were talking about season's beatings, but unfortunately, that is 16 days away. The head of the casino people will get back with them on Monday, which would already push it to the 8th. So it's like, you know what? It's a toy drive. You know, obviously this is an arena where we have to pay money to be at, but they were giving us a fantastic deal. And instead of a upfront cash thing, they're willing to do what we did initially at Sam's Town, which is a food and drink guarantee.
Yeah.
So even if we don't reach that food and drink guarantee, it would have been less than what we would have had to pay cash to be there. But this is fucking beautiful. And this is, you know, a place we would love to do a show every couple months at. So, you know, it seats about 300, food, beverage, all ages, you know, easy to get to. On the, you know, south side of the Strip. So you ain't heading into the middle of everything.
Right.
So basically you get to Tropicana and you make a left. So that should narrow it down.
So you got the Thunder from Down Under stage.
No. a better stage than that.
Nice.
And I ain't lying when I'm telling you, this is, you know, so it's like, man, if we can get this place, this would be fucking awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's awesome news. Let's quickly cross, had the intimate evening with Killer Cross. How did that end up going?
It was intimate. You know, we had, but I'll tell you what, we had some passionate fans that came to see Kevin. This guy Matthew from Florida flew just for that, came to the show, got the VIP treatment. Another guy from New Jersey who basically saw Kevin wrestle Saturday at the mall at GCW, got on a flight, came to the show Sunday, changed his flight on Monday. And Kevin gave him a free admission into the one night with.
Wow.
Because he was that appreciative. So Kevin, we did the seminar thankfully, for one time, as you can see, our trainers were vehemently letting people know that this is something that all the students should take a part of. Unfortunately, yeah, there's always some that don't. But as you can see, the turnout was tremendous. Even the FSW women's champion came to the seminar to learn, which makes it a shame that, you know, she was the only lady there.
Yeah, which is kind of a head scratcher, but.
But, you know, I you know, you can't complain. We even had a couple of kids class kids come in.
No.
That their parents felt that it would be, and I saw a bunch of people with notepads taking notes, because it wasn't an in-ring seminar of like, hey, let's do a drop toe hold. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, that's not what Kevin is going to teach you. You know, right. Kevin was a guy, he walked in the door, he had a plan, he had a mindset. And as I said, I guarantee you, Kevin is one you can count on one hand and chop two fingers off. Of somebody who started at a wrestling school and got to WWE with basically the same exact persona character,
right,
that he walked in the door with.
Yeah.
Mind-boggling.
Yeah.
No. You know, and I'll be honest with you, the other guy was another guy we had, LA Knight.
Yeah.
And we didn't train him, though, so I can't take that credit, but he was the guy when we first used him. And he'd already been through developmental of, you know, not developmental, but he trained with, I believe, Les Thatcher back then, before they were developmental. But in 2009, when Sean came to FSW as a wrestler, it was very much, you know, a lot of, you know, I was so impressed. We did the Rickerisms, if you go on the YouTube to see, because it was always the let me talk to you and stuff like that. So it's amazing. Yeah. That these guys took this long path, and Sean's was much longer than Kevin's, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
And it's crazy that in 2009, it probably took him to, and again, yes, he had good success in TNA. He was their heavyweight champion, Eli Drake, but to get to the big, big, big show of WWE, you know, it took him 13, 14 years.
Yeah.
And it was with a character concept that's pretty much identical to what he is now.
Yeah.
So if he's that good now, how good could he have been? In he could be a guy that we're talking about as one of the greatest of all times. If they signed him to do things in 2015 or 16, he'd have been 10 years into WWE by now.
Yeah. If there was a sticking, you know, that's the whole thing too. It's, you know, the timing might have worked out in his favor, you know, especially with, you know, where he was right before Vince got let go.
You know, we thought he aged out.
Yeah.
We thought that, man, when he got that Max Dupree character, it was like, oh, this is the beginning of the end. And the reason he got that character was because they felt, which would be Vince, I guess, that he was too old. Yep. I think he was at 36 at the time, 37.
Somewhere but now,
you know, and now that we've seen, you know, all of a sudden a Jeff Cobb showing up in WWE, things you would never expect, you know, Tama Tonga and the other one, you know, all in their late 30s, Damian Priest.
Yeah.
Like all these guys that, 20 years ago, they would have been, they were on their last legs at 40. Now it's just getting started.
Yeah. And it's a contrast too. Also with, when you think about Cena leaving, you know, the opposite effect, because now where you had those guys like Ricker, like, you know, Cage, even, you know, just in general, who had worked so many years to finally get to, you know, huge national showcases. Now you got guys like Cena, Samoa Joe, you know, AJ Styles. We're starting to see, you know, the rundown of their careers now ending.
CM Punk.
CM Punk, yeah.
Look at the heavyweight champion is CM Punk. In AEW, it's Samoa Joe. And in TNA, it's Frankie Kazarian.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, none of them are sniffing 40 anymore. No. Who's the youngest one? Kazarian, who's got to be 45?
Probably.
Samoa Joe and Kazarian got to be right there.
Yeah, I mean, all three of them, I think, are right at 47, 48. They have to be. Because John is 48, so yeah, they're all right.
Samoa Joe is 46.
Yep.
Born in 79.
Yep.
Kazarian was born in 77, so that makes him 48.
48. Yep.
So there you go. And CM Punk, he's got to be close to 50.
I think he's 48 as well, yeah. Unless he's 49. There you go,
48's the new 35.
Yeah.
And CM Punk is just turned 47.
Okay.
So, 1978. Yeah. So there you go. The heavyweight champions in the three biggest companies are no younger than 47 years old. How old's Okada? He's been around. Who's the new Japan champion, by the way, now?
That's a good question. Let's see here.
I love it. Like you said, it's a living nativity. For those of who don't know what nativity is, it's the Christmas story, right?
So what can people... Yeah, Okada's much younger.
Okay, he's in his 30s, right?
Yeah, he's a youngster. He's only 38.
Yeah.
But he ain't the champ there, so. But yeah, so. But interesting that those are who, you know, the champs are. And who's the other champ now in WWE?
The NXT champ? Is that what
No, the second heavyweight champion in WWE. It's Punk.
It's Cody.
Oh, Cody. Okay.
Yeah, and Cody's what, 42 now? Something like that? No, 40? So
Cody Rhodes. I don't know. He's been around a while. You forget that he's 40.
40, yeah.
He's the young pup.
New Japan's got Takeshita as the champion right now, and he's only 30. So
oh, okay. So they're keeping it young.
Yeah.
And yeah. Jericho was the Ring of Honor champ for a while, and he was right. The heavyweight champion.
Yeah, so. And I think, you never know. It's crazy because even, you know, look, Roman Reigns was champion forever, and that four-year reign, I think, got him like from 36 to 40 or somewhere in there. So it's like,
AJ's the tag champ.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Daniels tweeted out a picture this past week of AJ and Daniels and Kazarian and Samoa Joe, and, you know, was just very proud that here they are, those three guys all have belts right now at this age, and it's, you know, it's just crazy to think.
You know, for anybody who thinks Ring of Honor wasn't an extremely important company,
yeah,
you know, look at their champ. Look at the champs now; they were all Ring of Honor mainstays.
All of them, and you know, TNA just was able to survive money wise. You know, they had the big backing. But you can argue that Ring of Honor's impact in terms of who they polished and who they produced might even be bigger than TNA, who was chasing at that time Sting and Hogan and Booker T and all those guys, you know, going in with, you know, some of the newer talent that you were developing. But Ring of Honor has always been, you know, it was always you know, if you got a guy, it would be a guy like Raven who is willing to work a guy like CM Punk to make Punk better.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like Ring of Honor to me was not the super, super indie. To me, they were the lower level of a national company. They built themselves to be that way. And, you know, budgetarily, you know, they were content with running in 500 to 1,000 seat arenas around the country, which is basically what GCW did. When Ring of Honor kind of stopped during the pandemic, that's what GCW did. And GCW eclipsed Ring of Honor at that point. And that's why they became for sale. And that's why now they're a shell. The name Ring of Honor doesn't mean anything to me at all in AEW. But, you know, when it comes to legacy, that's what makes it so important. And that's why it's like FSW it kind of slides under the radar to people who aren't that aware. But having a run of our heavyweight champions being Sean Ricker, LA Knight, Brian Cage, Cross, Hammerstone, Bay, like that is mind-boggling.
Yeah.
You know, and Matt Hardy was the guy that turned it into Brian Cage. Yep. And then, you know, and then you have a guy like Ice Williams who then becomes an ID guy, you know, and it's like there's not many because that's what we are. We're an independent wrestling company. That's all. That's what we are. Right. And, you know, go think of another company where, you know, especially with Cross and Bay that we trained, and Hammerstone was a baby. He nobody knew who he was that we brought him into the fold. So to many people, he's an FSW guy, you know, and it's like, wow, that's some legacy. And then Solo Sikoa, who just got signed, and that stopped him from being the heavyweight champion that would have been. And it was like, oh, shit, like we thought we still had time with him. Or Zoe Stark, you know, being the women's champion in FSW. And it's like, man, where's our flowers for that one? It was like I saw, and that was one of the nicest things I saw was on the, you know, a post that somebody all of a sudden looked us up after the Cross thing. And then we're like, oh, shit, they saw the Bay thing, which made them saw the Hammerstone thing, which made them saw the LA Knight thing, which makes them saw the Cage thing. Like, holy shit. Like, man, this is a legacy of 10 years. You know, most of these independent companies don't last 10 months. We have a legacy of champions for 10 years.
You know, you could think back, you know, UPW was only around for about 8 years. Six years to 8 years. You know, Bassman couldn't even keep that going, you know. It's just that's how quickly you can fold, you know, if the chips aren't falling right. And that's one of the most remarkable things about the legacy is that it's you know, it's people who have gone on to prominency, as opposed to, you know, just people who keep a belt because they're well liked within the circle. And I think,
there's no doubt, you know, UPW is the forefront of who became. But then it also became a little easier because they became a WWE developmental territory.
Well,
he established himself before that.
What's interesting about that, what is really kind of the mind boggler on that is that the only ones who went on during that time period, it was only about a year time period, and Cena was under contract, and then they signed Heidenreich, and they signed Nathan Jones.
Tom Howard for a little while.
Yeah, and then he had Tom, but Tom got a cup of coffee there. Those other three all, you know, made WWE TV. But it was such a small time frame that a guy like Samoa Joe wasn't going to get a look because, you know, Pritchard was there and honest. It wasn't Vince's type. His body type did not match what Vince would like. You know, Kazarian was so young after they were the ID program. That's when he or after they were part of the developmental. That's when Kazarian got a shot, and he was only, you know, in the WWE for.
Yeah, he was kind of like that cruiserweight jobber.
Yeah, where they just kind of threw him on, you know, these shitty Saturday night shows or whatever.
Yeah, he didn't have much of a run there.
Right. You know, Daniels was on his way to WCW getting signed and broke his collarbone on a spot in WCW.
Yeah, against Modest.
Yeah. And that was the end of that, because then WCW was gone by the time Chris healed. So it's crazy, you know, when you look at the legacy and you look at all these guys like Navajo Warrior retiring. It's like, yeah, man, these were the last of the, you know, the guys who are now 45 or older, and all that knowledge now hopefully is getting passed on through, you know, people who are able to talk to them and work with them, because it's, you know, it's the last of that generation of people who were trained in that style of, you know, I was talking to Tom at the show and Tom Howard at the show, and that idea of ring generating and actually being able to call matches, it's like, it's a lost art form, man. Now you see everyone's like rehearsing for 5 hours.
Yeah.
Spots, and it's like, guys, just relax, go out there, feel the crowd, and tell the story. It's not brain surgery. Those are some of the guys who have gone on to careers of 20 plus years because that's what they could do. They could go in and work the situation, and you know, it's what they love to do. So fun to see.
Well, yeah, you know, and the funny thing is, though, you know, like even with me, you know, a lot of times, obviously, the older you get, you're going to lose a step. And, you know, we saw that with Matt Sydal. You know, we had him work Pentagon, and he kind of transitioned, and he had the one-eye gimmick and TNA. But his work rate totally changed. That his knees were blown, everything like that. You know, even with the Sabin and Shelley, you know, Sabin ended up coming back pretty strong. But yeah. Sabin, for a long time, man, those knees, like he had like a miraculous recovery to me, because he was in that cycle of totally changing his style.
Yeah.
And the Motor City Machine Guns weren't the Motor City Machine Guns when you're looking for that special tag match. And yeah, it's amazing that after he kind of healed up, he did a lot of agenting, and then he shows up in WWE, and it's almost like they go, those guys aren't missing a step.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it is like, wow. And Sabin, and to me, Daniels got to that point. Dude, 50 years old. You know, he can't be doing the stuff that he was doing. Yeah. He was, you know, when he got popular in TNA, he was already in his mid-30s, late 30s. Yeah. You know, because I remember talking to Mick Foley on my radio show when we were talking. And I'm like, well, you know, I got to get those younger guys opportunities like Chris Daniels. And he's like, well, you know, Chris is like 38. And I'm like, you know what I mean about getting the younger guys in terms of people that people didn't know and their opportunities,
right.
You know, the right. Age number, because again, you know, 50 is the new 40, 50 yep. is the new 30, to really be honest with you, because, yep. you know, you're not going to get many guys to give you a better match than Samoa Joe.
Yeah.
Kazarian was fantastic in the scramble match at the Benefit for Bay. And yep. I was like, wow. Like, I didn't watch enough TNA of Kazarian because I knew it was a lot more talking and totally different of what he used to be, because right. he was a work rate guy. Because I remember years ago when we were trying to do Vegas Extreme in 2001, and I always tell Frankie the story. There was a guy who ran a promotion. I forgot his name. He remembered it. I forgot it again. But it was Johnny something. And this guy ran a promotion like close to San Diego. And this was like 1999, 2000, whatever it was. And he sent me a VHS tape because we were looking for talent. and he was wrestling Kazarian. And I watched the match, and I just remember Kazarian just like, up, and the guy rolled him up 1, 2, 3. And I'm like, wow, this should have been a VHS on why I should book Kazarian, not this other fucking dude. Like, this other dude didn't do shit. But he owned the company, and Frankie had to pull him up, put him over.
Yeah.
And I always remember that. And that was the my first acknowledgement of knowing him, because I had heard the name in SoCal, and I kept up with UPW back then when we were doing stuff, because it turned out a lot of our guys, because Nykirk ended up hooking up with the with Navajo's crew through me, and then Nykirk and Navajo and Gallo and Knox would work the UPW shows. And then Modest and Morgan and Bison Smith and those guys, and Bison worked with us when we did the Vegas Extreme, as did Nykirk, and they would do the UPW stuff. So it was just kind of interesting on all that.
Yep. And it's funny too, when I was talking to Tom, one of the things that we still laugh at is the fact that the guy who really benefited most from that time and UPW and everything is The Miz. Because when The Miz trained there, boy, man, he was – the guys just gave him the hardest time, because he was a reality star.
I thought he was a joke in SmackDown. I thought the host – and then it was like, oh, sticking him with Morrison. What a – well, why are they punishing Morrison like that? You know, my guy Johnny Nitro. But I'll tell you what, man, The Miz became one of the best. Yep. And again – it wasn't because anything other than he put in hard fucking work to make himself do it.
Yep.
He could have mailed it in, took the paycheck. You know, there was a guy TNA signed, and he still wrestles Jesse, but never got to. And we had him at a seminar, and Robbie E was fantastic, and DJZ was fantastic. But, you know, Jesse kind of got pushed into a top spot pretty quickly. And never really, I think, worked to get to that next level, because he kind of got gifted it.
Yeah.
Well, Miz got a spot, but it wasn't a good spot. And for him to get that spot, man, he ended up putting in the time. And then when he got to that time, he got to work Cena. Cena blasted him. And it was like, oh, okay, well, this guy's done. But no, he kept fighting and fighting until he did beat Cena in WrestleMania.
Yeah,
because they like to do that WWE. That's the test.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
they did it with Bray Wyatt. Like, oh wow, he feuds with Cena. They did it with Wade Barrett. This guy's over his foot. And just when you think, well, Cena's not going to get hurt by that loss, this is going to be big for the other guy. And it was just like, boom, knocked him down the mountain.
Yep. Yeah, and now we can all hope that Miz gets friendly with you here, since he is now a resident of Nevada.
So. Yeah, you know, hopefully he needs to use the facility at some point, you know. You know, it's crazy how we're getting the current alumni. They aren't even alumni, the current roster. You know, Mia Yim's in the ring, Mishin, you know, Dominic Mysterio, Rey Mysterio.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
Cobb was in as he's been signed. He didn't train with us, but he came in to stop by.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just crazy. So but again, it all starts with you know, students and Future Shock. So remember, Saturday, it's 5 p.m. at the FSW Arena. Again, you can see it on the Title Match Network. And then of course Sunday the 7th. At 5 p.m. At the FSW Arena.
That's right. It's a Winter Wonderland. I missed out. I saw another promotion, Winter Wonder Slam. I'm like, damn, we missed out on it.
Well, trademark it for next year.
Yeah, you know. Because I figured, hey, we did Cruel Summer as the last one during the summer. I said we needed to do something with winter. And I couldn't really think of something to go along with. But Winter Wonder Slam would have been.
Yeah, yeah.
Would have been the name.
Oh, man. Well, there you go. Final thoughts.
Can't win them all.
Nah, final thoughts as we wrap up, Joe.
You know, moving forward, you know, we're looking forward. I took that call. hopefully for New Year's resolution, we'll have an announcement on Monday. I think this, you know, could be awesome because we've also talked with this place being a potential hot spot Mania week.
Okay.
And maybe move it from the arena to this place, which would make it a lot easier for the out-of-towners and the tourists who are going to be hanging out on the strip. We got WrestleCon and GCW together, the collective at the Horseshoe.
Yeah.
You know, so you have the Horseshoe, you have this place, and you have Allegiant. We'll be 5 minutes from Allegiant. So, hopefully by next podcast, we'll
know what's going on.
Have some information. You know, they even have this great podcast room that they were mentioning to me about if we wanted to utilize. They have a boxing champion, Phil, does his there every Sunday.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah.
So,
yeah,
state of the art.
Nice. Well, we can do an upgrade and not have to do it on your leisure chair.
There you go. But now I got to take a shower and actually drive somewhere. Jeez. It's kind of like when I did the radio show. Oh, you need to come in. Dude, show's at 7 in the morning on a Sunday, bro. I am not for free 30 minutes to do the exact same thing I can do here. Like, right. I'm waking up. I'll talk and go back to sleep. Or it's Sunday, I'll go watch my football games. I'm not going to drive 30, 40 minutes to come back to drive 30, 40 minutes
of course. To
do the same thing for an hour and a half. It's like 3 hours out of my day. Or I'm laying in my bed doing it.
Right. Right. Well, you could gamble. I don't know. I don't know what the upsides are.
Yeah, not much.
Well, until next week, everybody, thanks for tuning in. And happy wrestling, everybody.